Join us now for the Chapel Hour, coming to you from the campus of Bob Jones University. Our speaker today is Dr. Stephen Jones, president of BJU. The title of his message is Opportunity Plus Ability Equals Responsibility. The text is from Luke chapter 10, verses 25 through 37.
Now, very quickly, turn to Luke chapter 10, please. Luke chapter 10. And in just a few moments, we'll start at verse 25. Luke chapter 10. But let me start with this story. This is one I heard of at a Christian college, where a new student joined a student group, a choir group on the campus, and was unique. Had some personality quirks that set the person apart. Talked to herself, sang to herself, would come every choir late to the choir, and then would come in late and would sit not only in the wrong section for the voice, but in the wrong section for the gender. So that clearly stands out. Had some other things about the person that made it just different for the other students. And most of the other students kind of stood aloof from the person. Saw the quirks, laughed when the person had to be asked to move from the men's section to the ladies' section and to the right voice part and things like that. But then when the student withdrew from the school, the choir director took some time with the choir and really challenged the choir members. All of them saw the uniqueness of this student. But the choir director challenged the students. How many of them had done anything to minister to that person before she withdrew? And it was a learning time for the choir, and hopefully one they won't forget, because that actually took place here at the university. And all of us have a tendency to focus on ourselves, our preferences, our likes, our dislikes, what we're comfortable with, what we're not comfortable with. And we get so hung up on ourselves, and that is part of our sin nature and flesh, a vestige of it that we still have and must fight. We tend to focus on ourselves, and there can be a need right in front of us. And I know I speak for myself and for the administrators and the faculty and staff and all of us. There can be a need right in front of us because of some hang-up of our own or some preference of our own. We leave the need unmet. I want to ask you a question today that Jesus asked. Are you, in his sense of the word, a neighbor? Are you a neighbor? We've been dealing with walking together in love. Now, I'm not asking you, do you meet a need when it's somebody you like and want to help? I'm asking you today, do you meet a need when it's somebody you don't even know, or even more difficult, when it's somebody you don't want to know? Are you a neighbor? In Christ's sense. As I read the passage today, it'll boil down to this. Opportunity or need plus ability to meet that need. I believe Christ is teaching us equals responsibility to meet that need. Opportunity plus ability equals responsibility to meet the needs around us. Now, you know perhaps this passage. Look at verse 25 with me. Behold, a certain lawyer stood up and tempted him, speaking of Jesus, saying, Master, what shall I do to inherit eternal life? He said unto him, What is written in the law? How readest thou? And he answering said, Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy strength, and with all thy mind, and thy neighbor as thyself. And he said unto him, Thou hast answered right. This do, and thou shalt live. Just briefly, the lawyer comes, asks Christ this question, and Christ says, What's the Old Testament say to you? And this lawyer summarizes, and he does so exactly as we studied Christ's own answer in Matthew 22. Upon what does all the Old Testament hang? These two commands, the great commandments, as Christ said in Matthew 22. To love God with all your heart, soul, and strength, and to love your neighbor as yourself. And the lawyer boiled it down. He could perceive in the Old Testament that that was the teaching of the entire Old Testament. But immediately when Christ tells him in verse 28, this do, and thou shalt live. He answered, he said, you said it right. You analyzed it correctly, but he says, this do. Becomes obvious that the lawyer hadn't been living with perfect love for God and his neighbor. And he becomes defensive, as we'll see here. Because the next verse says, verse 29, he, willing to justify himself, said unto Jesus, and who is my neighbor? In a sense, this is a smokescreen. He is seeking qualification of this. And he doesn't focus on the part about loving God, because that's something that nobody really would be able to hold him accountable for. That's primarily an internal thing. But he focuses on his responsibility to others, because that's something that others, and perhaps those in the audience with Christ, had seen this man mistreat others. And so he tries to justify himself. And he comes back with what seems like a childish retort. Well, then who's my neighbor? Tell me that and maybe I'll do it. But actually, it's not childish at all. It's an important question, both for him and for us. Because you see, Jewish religious leaders at the time said, your neighbor, the person that you have to love according to the Old Testament, are those who are of Jewish lineage. Those who are of a pure Jewish bloodline. But as far as those who've intermarried, no, you don't have to love them. And as far as Gentiles, forget about it. You don't have to love them. And so he was asking, is there a limit to those I should love? Or if you turn that around, he's asking, whom do I have permission not to love? Do I have permission not to love that person in the choir? That person in the dining common? That person in my room? Who do I not have to love? And Christ tells a story to illustrate, but you'll notice he doesn't ever answer the guy's question. Who's my neighbor? In fact, Christ intimates that this is the wrong question. And he comes back with a revised question that basically is, what must I do to be the kind of neighbor Christ wants of me? And that's the focus for you and me. What must I do to be the kind of neighbor that God is expecting, that God prescribes for those who are his followers? And just briefly, two things to look at this morning. First, because Christ commands it, we must make loving use of each opportunity to be of help. And second, because Christ commands it, we must make loving use of our resources to be of help. First, because Christ commands it, we must make loving use of each opportunity to be of help. Look at the opportunity here. It's the same for all of these men. Verse 30. And Jesus answering said, a certain man went down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell among thieves, which stripped him of his raiment and wounded him and departed, leaving him half dead. And by chance there came down a certain priest that way, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. And likewise a Levite, when he was at the place, came and looked on him and passed by on the other side. But a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, came where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion on him. Now the opportunity was the same, right? The need was there for all three men. This man, robbed, naked, half dead, bleeding on the side of the road, is there. And three men have the same opportunity, see the same need. And the expectation is higher for the first two in Christ's parable. Because these are religious leaders. So you would expect them to act at the highest moral level, wouldn't you? A priest, a descendant of Aaron, one who is involved in the temple and temple sacrifices and maintenance of the temple. And as it's implied here, he's coming down from Jerusalem, probably having served his week of annual duty in the temple, from doing his duty to God. He's coming down from Jerusalem, down the road that leads toward the sea. Coming from serving God. And this man, this religious leader, observes the need. And he goes out of his way, not just to skirt the guy barely, so as not to get his robes dirty, but to pass by at the far extreme of the road and leave him where he found him. The Levite, a descendant of Levi, this is somebody who assisted in the temple. He couldn't make sacrifices himself, but they were assigned to help the priests in their sacrifice, in policing the temple. He was probably also coming from service in Jerusalem. Another religious leader, somebody that would be looked up to as an example, and yet he doesn't respond to the opportunity as he should. They all see the same opportunity and need, but these two men go out of their way to avoid it. Now let me ask you, What needs do you see? And what have you done to respond to them? In your classroom? Is there a student that everybody else avoids because of something unique about them? On your hall? In your room? In your choir or student group? The lonely person in the dining common who eats and always eats alone? The person who transferred in, perhaps at a junior or senior year after others had made friends and their circles of friends are established, and now this new person is coming without a circle of friends? How do you respond when you see a need? When you see a needy child on extension, perhaps marked by bad behavior or bad odor? How do you respond to the need? When you see or hear or meet a waiter or waitress in a restaurant who shares a need, or let me ask you this, what do you do when the person approaches you in the parking lot asking you for money at the grocery store? When you and I see a need, how do we respond to the opportunity in front of us? These two men, these religious leaders, saw a need, but one man, and only one man, took advantage of the opportunity to respond in love. And there were no real expectations for him. It says in verse 33, a certain Samaritan, and in the Greek, Samaritan is moved into a point of prominence in this verse to emphasize this is a Samaritan now, not a Jew, with an obligation to the man lying on the side of the road, but a Samaritan who had no obligation. And Jesus deliberately chose somebody who was a hated outsider. And says, you know what? Even if the person in whom you see a need is at a distance from you and hates you and you hate them, and everything about your culture says you're supposed to hate them, that opportunity is God ordained. Now, some history about this just briefly. You know the foolishness of Rehoboam, Solomon's son? Because he would not be more lenient on the followers of the kingdom. The kingdom divided, and the 10 northern tribes clustered and rebelled, were named Israel or Ephraim, or after Omri built the capital at the city of Samaria, became named and referred to as Samaria. Samaria was conquered. In 722 BC, the Assyrians came in. They conquered the land, and they took captive the inhabitants of the land, the best citizens of the land, and they took them elsewhere in the Assyrian Empire, and they scattered them, dispersed them. And then they brought in people from elsewhere in the Assyrian Empire and imported them into the area of Samaria and scattered them there. And those people, non-Jews, over time intermarried with the Jewish remnant there. And their offspring were half-breeds and were despised by the people, the good Jews of Judea, the two southern tribes. And when the two southern tribes came back from the Babylonian captivity, these people, the Samaritans, who also had the Pentateuch, who had the law of Moses, who knew that there was supposed to be another prophet like Moses, who knew that there was only one place in Israel they were supposed to worship, that God had established in Jerusalem at the Temple Mount, they wanted to help the Judeans rebuild the temple in Jerusalem so they could worship there. But they were rebuffed. The Judeans didn't want anything to do with the Samaritans, so the Samaritans began to oppose and drag their feet in the reconstruction of the temple. And then they built their own rival temple in violation of the law of Moses and aroused even further hatred, so much so that in 128 BC, the Jews came in and destroyed their temple at Mount Gerizim in Samaria. The hatred was so pronounced that, you know what the greatest insult Christ's enemies could hurl at him was? Listen to these verses in John 8:47-48. Christ was preaching. He said, "He that is of God heareth God's words. Ye therefore hear them not, because ye are not of God." Now that's a pretty strong pronouncement of Christ. And the people hearing him are incensed at it, and they say this in response to Christ. "Then answered the Jews and said unto him, Say we not well that thou art a Samaritan and hath a devil?" Does that give you a sense of how strong the hatred was? The worst thing they could think to call Christ was demon-possessed and a Samaritan. But a Samaritan is the one that Christ chose as the hero, the example, of the neighborly person here. And this man, in verse 33, he came where he was, he saw him, and he had compassion on him. And let me stop here, because it's easy to make excuses. And it's easy to make them very spiritual excuses. In fact, as I was preparing, I was trying to figure out, are there boundaries to this? You know, one is, it says of this man that he had compassion. It doesn't say of the two religious leaders, they had compassion. So maybe that's the difference. And maybe a spiritual response would be, well, you know what? If you see a burden and the Lord lays that burden on your heart, gives you compassion for it, that's yours to meet. But the implication here is that God is commending the Samaritan for having the compassion. But he is indicting the other two who should have had compassion. And he's indicting us when we don't have compassion when we see a need. Whatever that need, when it comes across our sphere of influence, it is an opportunity that God has set before us. So there is no excuse. These men, the two who preceded the Samaritan, they should have had compassion. And so should we, if we will get beyond ourselves and love like Christ, and love like the neighbor he wants us to be. So this man made loving use of the opportunity to meet a need. But look as well at the fact that because Christ commands it, we must make loving use of our resources to be of help. Verse 34. And he went to him and bound up his wounds, pouring in oil and wine, and set him on his own beast, and brought him to an inn and took care of him. And on the morrow, when he departed, he took out 2 pence and gave them to the host, and said unto him, take care of him, and whatsoever thou spendest more, when I come again, I will repay thee. And this man made use of his resources. The implication here is that this Samaritan is probably a merchant. And he's probably traveling from Jerusalem on business. He probably has a schedule to keep somewhere he's going, after somewhere he's been in his business routine. And yet this man gave of his resources. Now, hopefully you know this story. But let me just spotlight a couple of resources he gave. He gave of his time. He gave his time to size up the situation, not to pass by on the other side of the road, to ignore it, to think, you know what, if I walk by this person fast enough, it's not going to bother me that there's a need right in front of me. Don't we do that? But he took the time to size up the situation. He took the time to clean the wounds, to soothe them with wine and oil. He took the time to bind up those wounds, perhaps even tearing off portions of his garment to use as bandages, because his clothing, the man's clothing, had been taken. He takes the time to do that. Then he puts him on his beast, and he has a slower journey now, because he has a man half dead on his animal that he is leading to an inn. It slows him down. He gave his time and he gave his care overnight. He tended to the man overnight at the inn. He gave his time. So even if you say, you know what, I can exempt myself from the message here because I don't have resources, thinking monetary resources to throw at needs, you have time. You have other resources you can give to those needs. And so do I. So none of us can exempt ourselves from what Christ is saying. He gave of his monetary resources and his physical resources. I mean, he gave his vehicle, right? His beast. He gave him that to use while he himself walked and led the animal. He gave the cost of the night's lodging, and then he gave the cost of ongoing care. He gave 2 more days' wages and said, you know what, if there's more that this man requires before he's well enough, tell me when I come back, and I'll pay that too. And he had no obligation to this person other than the obligation to love his neighbor as himself. And you and I will come across people to whom we have no obligation. We don't know them. They're not friends. And maybe we don't even really want to know them for some reason. But we have the obligation to be a neighbor like this. It's easy to say we don't have much. But even if you hear there's a friend who has financial need, you have time to sit and listen. You have time to sit and pray with that person and share the burden with others. You can give your ear. You have friendship that you can give to the person who doesn't have friends or who comes into the year mid-semester or as a transfer student. You can give the opportunity to bring that person into your circle of friends that are already established and to make them feel included as a part. You can take them to the store using your vehicle to help them. You can give of your material goods, and you can give what's most priceless, the gospel, to those you come across who have the need of salvation. Faculty, staff, you can give time, you can give counsel, you can give discipleship. You can give help with running errands, material goods. We all have resources. And Christ commands that we make loving use of those resources to be of help. Because look what he says at verses 36 and 37. Which now of these three thinkest thou was neighbor unto him that fell among the thieves? And he said, and this is the lawyer speaking in answer to Christ's question. He said, he that showed mercy on him. Then said Jesus unto him, go thou and do thou likewise. It's a command from Christ that when we see a need, when we observe the opportunity, and when we have the ability, we have the responsibility, and we have the command of Jesus Christ. And walking together in love means being a neighbor like this. But how are we most often likely to act? Just listen to these three verses from James chapter 2. Where James says, what doth it profit, my brethren, though a man say he have faith and have not works? Can faith save him? If a brother or sister be naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you say unto them, depart in peace, be warmed and filled, notwithstanding ye give them not those things which are needful to the body, what doth it profit? A lot of us are good about talking about the needs around us. A lot of us are good at casting it off, at making some passing remark or some well wish within our heart. But until it gets worked out in practical help and ministry to others, we have not loved like the neighbor Christ wants us to be. There's no excuse for you or for me. Opportunity plus ability equals responsibility. And Jesus Christ said, go thou and do likewise.
You've been listening to the Chapel Hour, coming to you from the campus of Bob Jones University. Our speaker was the university president, Dr. Stephen Jones. For a cassette or compact disc copy of today's message, send a check for $6 to Campus Store, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, 29614. Be sure to mention the name of the speaker and today's date. The Chapel Hour has been sponsored by Bob Jones University.